Live on. Layla Rahimi and Marshall Harris bring you five topics on their minds today on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I got five on it. Number one.
On Monday's edition of FS1's The Herd, host Colin Cowherd shared this theory on Bears coach Ben Johnson sitting quarterback Caleb Williams in the preseason opener against the Dolphins on Sunday.
It's okay if you don't want to play Caleb Williams, but I do think it was a little strategic. Burrow played, Mahomes played, Spencer Rattler played, everybody but Tom Brady played. Like, the whole world played this weekend, and it was almost like he was saying, you know, he's not quite there. I don't need another week of heat from the Chicago media. He took a lot of snaps in practice. It felt a little strategic, did it not?
What are your thoughts on this theory from Colin Cowherd as heard there on FS1?
Okay, here's the thing. I did like the Tom Brady reference. I thought it was funny. But we're not the reason Caleb Williams didn't play. And isn't your first thought always when the starters are resting that they're probably not ready? That's my first thought every time. You know what I'm going to do if I think something's not ready and I have the option to do something else? I'm doing the thing that is ready that's something else. That's how that works. It's a logical thought process. Does it mean that we're mad at the Bears for it? No. Did we deal with an offense that wasn't ready for the last 2 years? Yes. So, okay, what's another preseason game if that's the case?
Listen, I'm not saying that Colin isn't onto something here, but I don't think that Ben Johnson is worried about what we think about what he's doing. I think he's just doing what he wants to do. He doesn't like to play quarterbacks in the preseason. The evidence is all there. I mentioned earlier in the show, 10 preseason snaps for Jared Goff, his first year as offensive coordinator in the preseason. And Goff had to basically say, I need to have this time with my offensive line to get those 10 preseason snaps. I also think they're not ready. I think that is true.
Why is that a problem?
Yeah, I think that's just the reality of dealing with a quarterback learning a first-time system under a new head coach.
This offense wasn't ready for years.
Yeah, that's not...
I'm still waiting for Matt Nagy's offense.
Welcome to Chicago. Welcome to Chicago. So the answer to the question is, no, I don't think he's worried about anything about what we're doing as the media. I think he will put Caleb Williams out there when he feels like it. Unfortunately, I'm not sure if that means he'll do it in the preseason at all.
Would you say it would happen in a fortnight? We're getting there, guys. We're getting there.
I don't think it's happening in preseason game number three. I think this is the time. If it's going to happen, it's going to be preseason game number two against the Bills.
When he said, like, afraid of the media, my immediate thought in my head was just, like, Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams see Mark Grody, and they're like, ah! Boo! like they're just terrified of Grody marching on down.
Grody and his Bears credential pick that he was so proud of, where he's using skincare.
Like, Mark Potash isn't on the beat anymore. There's no one there to truly spark fear in any of these people.
Who do we think that Colin Cowherd is afraid of? Is that what we're trying to figure out?
Jason Leisure.
Who in the Chicago media is Colin Cowherd's nemesis?
Chris Emma.
It's definitely Chris Emma.
It's definitely Chris Emma. If all else goes, what is it? Some people like Chris Emma? Is that the...
That's and the others, they fear him.
Now we know who doesn't like him. It's Ben Johnson, apparently.
Poor Emma. He just gets back to work one day and is like, Colin Cowherd's mad at me.
To be fair, I love Chris Emma, so bring him on.
Number two.
Poor Chris Emma.
Bears offensive coordinator Declan Doyle says the left tackle position is, quote, wide open. I think it's time for a dollar bet. Layla, Marshall, Ray, me, Robbie. Who is your pick to be the Bears' week one starting left tackle?
Well, if the streets have taught me anything, it's that I have a dollar to give this bet. So,
literally the streets.
Yeah. No, as for the other streets, as for the other streets, that's not really my area, would you say? I go outside and stuff, but I'm mainly on the sidewalk.
Yeah, sidewalk. I'm a sidewalk guy.
In fact, yeah, maybe I'm also in that little courtyard off of the sidewalk, but I'm outside. Okay, so all of that said, I have a dollar to work with here because the street gave me a dollar the other day and I used it to pay Robbie. But it's still, to me, the obvious choice is the guy who started today at left tackle. It's Braxton Jones. Because as Brad Biggs told us on the morning show today, and I love hearing Brad Biggs' sports thoughts as he talks football with us.
Who?
Yes. That he proceeded to paint this picture about how, do you really want a rookie left tackle to start on Monday night against the Vikings in a Brian Flores heavy offense or defense that calls a lot of blitzes and throws a lot of various looks at you. And that would be a bad situation to put a rookie left tackle in, would it not? And then I was like, wait, are you talking about Kron Amagaji, which is what happened last year? Or are you talking about Ozzie Trapillo? So that said, Braxton Jones, Bears.
Can I just say not Kron Amagaji? Is that, will that get me a dollar from each of you?
If
I
no,
just,
that will not.
Oh, I got to
narrow
it down.
I can look outside and see.
Yeah, so, yeah, I'm not, we're not.
Street, do you have a dollar for this bet?
No, I'm not taking your dollar off the street. It's got to be a clean, crisp, from the bank dollar.
The day that I walk past money on the street.
Unmarked bills.
I am rich.
Yeah, I think you're already rich. That's what I'm hearing right now. Listen, if we were doing this and it was week 17, I would say Ozzie Trapillo. But since it is week one, I'm going to go with Braxton Jones. But if it was week 17, I think at some point, Ozzie Trapillo supplants Braxton Jones at left tackle during this season.
And for those of you saying I have a knack for finding things on the street, that's what happens when you're short. You're closer to the ground. It's easier to see stuff down there. I see all sorts of stuff.
I'm going to be bold. Give me Ozzie Zapillo Trapillo. I want him. I think he's going to be great. I think he has a bright future. I've liked everything I've heard from him. I also want your guys' dollars. So give me Ozzie Zapillo.
I'll find it later.
All right, Ray.
I'm leaning towards Braxton Jones, so I'm in the Braxton Jones camp. I just, you know, I'm with you, Marshall. I'd like to see the emergence of Ozzie Trapillo at some point, but I don't think it's going to be week one as a starter.
He just seems so responsible, though. He really does. I would trust him with, like, I don't know, a pet to take care of or my bank account or something. He's that trustworthy.
He would feed the goldfish every day. Robbie, so you're either going to get a dollar out of all three of us or you're going to owe each of us a dollar.
Correct.
You understand
so
that,
So I either
right?
get $3 or give $3.
Yep, I like this.
Me is against the world.
Is this you hedging? Yes. Is this you hedging your bet against the Josh Giddy news?
I'm just me against the world. I don't know. They zig, I zag.
It's a pillow.
Number three.
Robbie has ended that question. He played the sounder.
That's
Robbie
right.
has spoken.
Robbie has spoken, and this is 5 on it on 670 The Score with Layla Rahimi and Marshall Harris. And we move on to question number 3, which is, which slumping Cubs hitter do you think has the best shot at turning things around in Toronto?
Until the odds tell me differently, and they still tell me he's due, it's Kyle Tucker. The resume outweighs the length of time, which for me feels like infinity. But the numbers say otherwise. So until that's the case, he still has not gotten an entire calendar month without hitting a home run. I still think it's Kyle Tucker. Now, I know that that's a bit of a lazy take when you consider what's going on in front of us. But to me, that resume matters. The back of the baseball card matters. He's still the guy who the numbers say most likely is the one to break out of this.
Okay, so when we say break out of the slump, are we saying getting back to their career numbers?
I'm saying how about you just produce in any way, shape, or form, damn it, Cubs.
Well, I mean, he's been doing some of that.
He has been doing some of that, but it's not...
It's not the power.
It's yes, exactly. It's a power outage.
Okay, so what would be getting out of the slump for Ian Happ? Because that's where I'm leaning right now, but I want to make sure I have this defined clearly.
Oh, I was reading about this earlier today.
What would that mean? Would that mean he gets his batting average back up to .246, which is
I'll
his
take
career
that.
Average? Does that mean he gets his on-base percentage up to .341, which
I'll,
is his career average?
I'll take
average?
That. I think me as a Cubs fan, I'm going to take anything that is better than what we've had. So, Marshall, I will take any positive, you know, and anything that the Cubs can do at the plate that will lead to scoring runs.
I'm going to go Ian Happ, and here's why. Kyle Tucker, the aforementioned, is already in his neighborhood when it comes to on-base percentage. I'm not confident he's getting back to the slug that he's had in the course of his career.
The bat speed.
But he could still be productive as a guy who doesn't get back to his career average in the slugging department. Ian Happ, meanwhile, I think a couple of good weeks, and he's back there. Remember, he's got 16 home runs. And we all agree Ian Happ is slumping, right? But he still has 16 home runs. He still has an on-base percentage of .325, which is only 16 points under what his on-base percentage for his career is at .341. So I like Ian Happ's chances to get back to, say, a .114 OPS plus. He's at .108 right now. All it's going to take is Ian Happ's BABIP going up a little bit back towards the league average, and Ian Happ's going to be right back playing gold glove defense and providing good on-base percentage with occasional pop in the order.
No, you're right. Like, his profile dictates that he is not the farthest off of what he typically does.
Right. So that's why I'm going with Ian Happ.
Number four.
This morning, ESPN released an in-season update to its rankings of the top 50 players in baseball. Cubs outfielder Pete Crow Armstrong, PCA, was ranked at number 7 overall, and outfielder Kyle Tucker was ranked at number 11 overall. What are your thoughts on where PCA and Tucker fell on this list?
Okay, the only way this list makes sense is because it's this season. But unfortunately, I still think it is too high for Pete Crow Armstrong because, frankly, we know what he's been doing hitting-wise as well. And especially against lefties, it's been a struggle. So because of that, and because of even recent events where Justin Turner is pinch-hitting for him late in a game, even though he's batting cleanup in that example, I think you can't do that in the top 10, right? Like, that scenario can't come up if you're a top 10 player in baseball, even for the season. So because of that, I think he got ranked a little high. The other thing is, it's ahead of Jose Ramirez, who I know is not the same guy who we've seen for the past few years. But keep in mind, the Guardians got to the ALCS last year. Jose Ramirez is always a threat at the plate. Consistently, you know something is going to happen. And he's got a 4.9 WAR. So given all those things, I still think even Jose Ramirez is probably ahead of PCA on this list.
You know what? I had to look long and hard at this because I was like, all right, PCA's having a pretty good season, even with the fact that in his last 75 at-bats, he has struck out 25 times. Let me run that back.
What?
In his last 75 at-bats, he has walked twice and struck out 25 times.
It can't be number 7.
Oh.
Can't be number 7 then.
Oh, is that too cold and hard of a fact?
That is the ratio, 25 to 2.
Oh my God. There was a time where we thought 25% like strikeout rate was awful.
But here's the thing. I'm keeping PCA at 7. You know why? Layla's looking at me right now. If you're on the Twitch, I mean, I encourage
Garrett
you to go.
Garrett Crochet's number 10 on this list. Who's winning the AL Cy Young?
Scooble.
Okay.
Very funny.
This is about the entire season. Despite what I just said about Pete Crow Armstrong, he still has a 6 WAR. That leads the National League. So I got no problem with him being at number 7. He's going through a slump right now. But I don't think it's a big enough slump to knock him out of the top 10.
Kyle Schwarber is number 14 on this list.
Now, his placement is erroneous.
He has 42 home runs.
His placement is quite erroneous.
What would we do to have Kyle Schwarber on the team right now?
Well, here's the question nobody wants to ask. Would you rather have Kyle Schwarber or Kyle Tucker? Which Kyle would you rather have?
Kyle Schwarber. What is probably not going to make $500 million, and you could have had him for, eight. And, well,
one of those players
he could have probably also been the one game difference maker to get to the playoffs in 2023.
Well, I'll just say this. Now that he can hit left-handed pitching effectively with his battle armor, he's probably hitting 500 home runs for his career. I know that's tough to swallow, but he's probably hitting 500 home runs for his career, Kyle Schwarber. That's crazy.
So I question the list. That's basically...
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that, but I have no problem with PCA's placement at number 7.
By the way, since I'm here, number 1 is Aaron Judge. Number 2 is Shohei Ohtani. Mixed it up there, guys. Number 3 is Tarek Skubal. Okay, probably now the Cy Young favorite in the AL.
He's a beast.
He was always the fights. When was he not?
No, Garrett Crochet was for most of the time, like most of the offseason and into like the first couple months of this year at least. Cal Raleigh, number 4, Bobby Witt Jr., Paul Skeens, and then PCA.
Yeah, Skeens should be higher.
Number 5.
All right, the last question on Five On It on the Score with Layla Rahimi and Marshall Harris. On Tuesday, Monday, Bears linebacker Noah Sewell talked about the change in his diet and said this when he was asked if there's a food item he misses right now.
M&M's. Miss the M&M's. Yeah, that's about it.
What's the most difficult item you've had to give up for dietary reasons?
Oh, the M&M's is such a valid point because of the chocolate, but it's so good.
Do we get a follow-up on like what type of an M&M's?
No, you know,
there's so many types of M&M's now.
No follow-up on the M&M's. It was just moving on. It was more about, you know, what he's been doing physically. That was more of the focus.
Well, peanut on M&M's are the best M&M.
What? No. Nope. No, they're not. Peanut butter M&M's are the elite M&M.
And so it begins. That's what I did. I just lay the grenade out there and let you guys react.
It was very Mark Grody of you.
Yeah, you know, I do what I can. That's my guy.
You're a provocateur.
Provocateur. But that's something that Mark Grody and myself have in common. We are provocateurs.
You're more deliberate in your actions.
I am.
After knowing you too well.
I'm not subtle with it.
No, like you'll lead in and smile. Like you communicate what you're doing, your intent. Grody's like, I don't know, did I just do that?
Yeah, he's a Pat Murphy guy. He's an all shucks guy.
Yeah, Grody's like, oh yeah, I just have this pancake in my pocket. Psych, it's a grenade. His name is Andrew Vaughn. Bye.
Bears.
So what's the most difficult item you've ever had to give up for dietary reasons?
Wait, what's the elite M&M? You don't get out of this.
The elite M&M... I like the... I tell you one I don't like, the pretzel one.
No, that doesn't count. You have to say which one you like the best. The pretzel one is good.
I like the pretzel one, yeah.
I'm okay with the pretzel one. I have my vote.
I think I'm a peanut butter M&M guy.
Yes.
I think I'm a peanut butter M&M
guy. Ray?
That was my vote as well. Peanut butter M&Ms, baby. I love peanut M&Ms too, but peanut butter is...
So what's the... Reese's Pieces? Reese's Pieces?
I love Reese's Pieces.
Those are also delicious, but go ahead. What's the item?
For me, like I am lucky that I don't have to have a lot of restrictions, right? Like I don't have to give up anything, which is kind of great. So that said, I think the hardest thing for me to give up at any given time, I just can't have them in the house. Wheat Thins.
What?
Oh my gosh. Wheat Thins are it for me. It's like this, they have like the slightest little bit of sweetness. They're just impossible for me to keep in the house. I have to like count them out so that way I don't mindlessly eat them all. Wheat Thins.
Okay, for
but
me.
I feel like those are good for you.
No, not at the rate I eat them. No, nothing is. No.
For me, it's the sugar bombs known as cereal, straight up, just cereal.
Oh, I love like snacking on cereal.
Once you learn what cereal really is, once you get past your Saturday morning cartoon days and understand that cereal is just diabetes in carb form.
Oh, no. What about Grape Nuts? I like Grape Nuts. I'm the one person. Eh. Yes, I am that person.
But I was eating Apple Jacks, and I was eating Frosted Flakes, and I was eating all the things. Like, what do you mean?
Super sugar crisp.
Six-year-olds do not eat Grape Nuts, okay? Six-year-olds eat the most sugary thing they can find.
I think I was eating Raisin Bran at that time. My mom didn't want
what
us to have
child
sugar.
What kind of child were you?
My mom, I mean, I ate stuff. My mom was pretty, for whatever reason, sugary cereals was a thing for her.
But yeah, okay. I gave up cereal and I never looked back.
So what's the one cereal, though, if you're stuck on a desert island and it's like, hey, there's this box of cereal. What's the one you're hoping
for? Apple Jacks.
For? Okay, it is.
It's Apple Jacks.
That's the choice?
Oh, wow. Now I'm getting killed off of Apple Jacks. Okay.
Cracklin' Oat Bran, man.
What are you talking about? You can't.
What the hell?
You can't come at me about Apple Jacks and your answer be crack. I remember.
Do you
my
even
parents,
know about that cereal?
Yes, because my parents used to eat it.
I eat really responsible cereals. I don't know.
Clearly.
Clearly, flavor
Special
is
K
not a priority.
With strawberries is the crack. It is the best cereal. The best.
Plain you Special healthy, K is also amazing.
You healthy children.
He's
get out
healthy.
Of my face.
It's even better
do I look
flakes.
Healthy to you? No.
I was going to kick it old school and go with Cookie Crisp, baby. That was a classic.
Literal mini yelling, chocolate chip cookies in cereal.
That's it.
I say this yelling at Marshall with homemade chia pudding with coconut milk and banana.
She's very healthy, her adult version of herself, just like her child version of herself.
No. I eat sugar.
No!
I,
yeah. The conversation stopped after Cracklin' Oat Bran was brought up voluntarily.
Portion size is kind of a big deal in this.
Oh my goodness.